वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायिष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. दिस् इस् दि सिक्स्थ केण्टो चाप्टर् वन्. Today we're on text number 20. Right? Atra chodaharanti mam. Okay. So kindly repeat. Atra cha udaharanti imam itihasam puratanam dutanam Vishnu yamayoho sambadah तम निबोध मे अत्र चोदाहरन्ति माम इतिहासं पुरातनम् दूतानां विष्णु यमयोः संवादस्तं निबोध मे अत्र चोदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहास पुरातनम् दूतानां विष्णुयमयो संवादस्तमिद्न बोधमे अत्र चोदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहासं पुरातनम् दूतानां विष्णुयमयोः संवादस्तं निबोध मे अत्र चोदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहासं पुरातनम् दूतानां विष्णुयमयोः संवादस्तं निबोध मे अत्र चोदाहरन्ति माम् दूतानां विष्णुयमयोः संवादस्तं निबोध मे. अत्र चोदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहासं पुरातनम् दूतानां विष्णुयमयोः संवादस्तं निबोध मे अत्र इन् दिस् कनेक्षन् च आल्सो उदाहरन्ति दे गेव् एस् एन् एक्साम्पल् इमम् this itihasam, the history of Ajamila, puratanam, which is very old, dutanam, of the order carriers, Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, Yamiyoho, and of Yamaraj, Samvadaha, the discussion, Tam, that, Nibodha, try to understand, Me, from me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this regard, learned scholars and saintly persons describe a very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu and those of Yamaraj. Please hear of this from me. Please repeat. In this regard, learned scholars and saintly persons describe a very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu and those of Yamaraja. Please hear of this from me. Purport. The Puranas, or old histories, are sometimes neglected by unintelligent men who consider their descriptions mythological. Actually, the descriptions of the Puranas, or the old histories of the universe, are factual, although not chronological. The Puranas record the chief incidents that have occurred over many millions of years, not only on this planet, but also on other planets within the universe. Therefore, all learned and realized Vedic scholars speak with references to the incidents in the Puranas. Srila Rupa Goswami accepts the Puranas to be as important as the Vedas themselves. Therefore, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he quotes the following verse from the Brahma Yamala. Shruti Smriti Purana Adi Panchadatra Vidhim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpata Iva Kalpate. Devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narad Panchadatra is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. A devotee of Krishna must refer not only to the Vedas, but also to the Puranas. One should not foolishly consider the Puranas mythological. If they were mythological, Shukadeva Goswami would not have taken the trouble to recite the old historical incidents concerning the life of Ajamila. Now, the history begins as follows. Om Agnana Timirandhasya Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Bhupakada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guroho Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे अत्र चोदाहरन्ति इमं इतिहासं पुरातनं धूतानां विष्णुयमयोः संवादस् तं निबोधमे. In this regard, learned scholars and saintly persons describe a very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu and those of Yamaraja. Please hear of this from me. So the first point Srila Prabhupada makes in his purport is that the Puranas or the old histories are sometimes neglected by unintelligent men who consider their descriptions mythological. There are some philosophers who also reject the Puranas and the Smriti in general, namely the Mayavadis. Prabhupada elsewhere describes Mayavadis only accept the Shruti mantras, that means the four Vedas and the Upanishads, and sometimes Bhagavad Gita. They call it Prasthana Trayi. And they don't accept the Puranas and they don't accept the Smriti Shastras. For example, Prabhupada is here quoting, well, he calls it from Brahma Yamala. It's also quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is himself quoting earlier authorities. So Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a good example of a Smriti literature. You might say it's a sectarian literature, usually composed at a later date. But the idea is that Shruti means what we hear from the Vedas, and Smriti means what we remember from what we've heard from the Vedas. And from what we remember, it follows that there's going to be some explanation. From the point of view of the mundane scholars, the oldest of the Vedic literatures and the most reliable of the Vedic literatures are considered to be the four Vedas and the Upanishads, mainly because of the method in which these have traditionally been memorized and preserved since time immemorial. Vedic scholars, brahmanas, who are qualified to chant the Vedas, they actually learn the Vedas by rote memorization, and they learn them entirely according to their capacity. Therefore, traditionally, some brahmanas were called, for example, Dvivedi, right? Dvivedi in Hindi, they call it Dube. And some of them are called Trivedis, and some of them are called Chaturvedis or Chobes, according to the number of Vedas that they've actually memorized. And they do memorize these Vedic literatures, and they're not even really very concerned in many cases about what the mantras mean. Because according to some schools of Vedic interpretation, it doesn't matter what the Vedas mean. All you have to do is recite them. And by that, there is innate potency in the recitation of those mantras, and that potency is what gives the sacrifice efficacy, and this Vedic sacrifice actually sustains the universe. This is what they believe. This is not our philosophy, but this is called Purva Mimamsa, or Karma Mimamsa philosophy. It was one school of Vedic interpretation that later arose. Our school is called Uttara Mimamsa, better known as Vedanta, which means we actually do want to know what these mantras mean and why we perform these any kind of sacrifices as the Vedas enjoin. So there are different schools of Vedic interpretation, and each school will have its Smriti literature. The Smriti literature will be that sectarian literature that explains the tenets of their interpretation. So, for example, you have Dharma Sutras. These are supposedly coming at a later date. And you have Dharma Shastras, and that's Karmakandya literature. And then different philosophical literatures. You have Nyaya, and you have Sankhya, and you have Yoga, etc., etc. But all of them are ultimately based on the Vedas, and they derive authority, supposedly, from the Vedic literatures. So here it's being pointed out, Prabhupada is mentioning, that we don't neglect the Puranas and the Itihasas, even though they're not so highly regarded by some schools of philosophy, because they are highly regarded by others. And in fact, within the Shruti mantras themselves, I'm thinking of the Shatapatha Brahmana, one of the Shruti literatures, there is mention of the Itihasas, there is mention of the Puranas, even in those so-called earlier literatures. So they have authority, and it depends on who you ask. That the Mayavadis don't accept the authority of the Vedas says more about the selective bias of the Mayavadis than it does about the authority of the Itihasas and the Puranas. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto and then again in the third canto, in at least two places, the Srimad Bhagavatam says that the Itihasas in particular are considered to be, and the Puranas are considered to be, the fifth Veda. They're equal in status to the Vedas. So we accept them in that way. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada sees fit to quote Srila Rupa Goswami, Shruti, Smriti, Puran, Adi. Adi means etc. in Sanskrit. When you put this suffix at the end of a compound, it means etc. So Shruti, Smriti, Puran, Adi, Pancharatra Vithim Vina, Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpata Aiva Kalpate, devotional service that is not performed with reference, with explicit reference, to the Shrutis, to the Smritis, to the Puranas, etc. That would include the Itihasas and the Pancharatras, etc. Pancharatra, an aside here. Pancharatra is one of a subclass of Vedic literature called the Agamas. Nigama means the Vedas themselves, just like the Shruti. Basically, Shruti and Nigama, they're synonymous terms. But then there's this other class of Vedic literatures called Agamas, and they don't really have Vedic authority, although, according to some schools, they do support the version of the Vedas. Nobody really knows their history, so they're sometimes dubious, considered at least by mundane scholars to be dubious. But they're generally called Samhitas. For example, Brahma Samhita we have falls into this class of Agama literature, or Pancharatra is also Agamic literatures. So there are different classes of Vedic authority. And different schools of thought will accept so many Pramanas. So we accept, well, actually Krishna tells Uddhava what we accept. He says, Shruti Pratyaksham Aitihyam Anumanam Chatushtayam. There are four of them mentioned in the 25th chapter, I think, of the 11th canto. He says one of them is Shruti, that we've already described, the Vedas themselves, or Shruti meaning the general process of hearing from authority, Shabda Pramana. That's called Shruti. And then Pratyaksha means your direct perception, what you see, what you hear, what you touch, etc. Direct sensory perception is also valid within a more limited scope. And then there's also a new one here, Aitihyam. What is Aitihyam? Anybody know? Huh? Historical reference. Basically, it means the same thing as Itihasa. So it's a very strong affirmation of the authority of the Itihasa. And then finally, Anumana. Anumana, we know, means guesswork, conjecture, logical extrapolation. So these four Krishna accepts as bona fide references, but the best of all of them is, of course, Shabda Praman, to hear from authority. So Shruti means not only the Vedas themselves, but in this context it means the process of hearing from authority, Shabda Praman. He says, Pramaneshu anavasthanad vikalpat savidajyate. One can understand the nature of this temporal, relative, material existence with reference to these authorities. You cannot understand what's going on without these four. So Krishna himself, he also encourages this in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 17, verse number 15. Anyone know? anadvegyakaram vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat. One should speak things which are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and palatable, and which is not agitating to others. This is called vangmayam tapa uchyate. Krishna says this is called austerity of the tongue. And in chapter 13, text number 5, he similarly says, Rishibhir bahudha gitam chando bhir vivithai prathak brahma sutra padaischeva hetumad vir vinishchitai. He's describing the material nature. What is chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita? Anybody remember what the topic is? What does it deal with? It deals with nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness, our field of activities. That is to say, our status within this material world, our entanglement, our scope of operation within conditional life. It's a very important topic, and there Krishna says you have to understand it. Well, he doesn't say you have to, but he indirectly endorses this by saying, those who are wise, the rishis, they have described this with reference to chanda. Chanda in this sense means shruti, with reference to the Vedic literatures. Mm-hmm. And in a logical manner. Hetumadbhir vinishchitai. So Krishna is endorsing this process, and of course we know Srila Prabhupada in his purport of that chapter 17, verse number 15, he says that one should not speak nonsense. Whatever one says in spiritual circles, one should corroborate it. We don't do this. Generally, we corroborate what we're doing in spiritual circles or what we're saying in spiritual circles by reference to what other people are doing or what other people are saying. But this is not what is being taught here by Krishna or by Srila Prabhupada. We have to actually understand the Shastras directly through the agency of the spiritual master's mercy and his explanations. That's why these Bhaktivedanta purports exist. Srila Prabhupada used to say, He said his only criticism of his disciples was that they were not reading his books. And that still holds good, pretty much. So anyway, this is itihasam puratanam. Puratanam means very old. So Srila Prabhupada says they're not mythological, and they're very, very old histories of the universe. In fact, they're so old that they're beyond the scope of two of these pramans that we've already mentioned. They're beyond the scope of sensory perception, because none of us have sensory perception going back beyond 100 years. And no one in this room even has 100 years worth of sensory perception. So that's out the window. And then Anuman as well. How can we possibly conjecture about things that happened millions and billions of years ago when the circumstances were completely different? I grew up here in Southern California, and I can say that about, say, 40 years ago or 50 years ago, things were very different here than they are right now. So the context is always changing. It's like they have those, change happens, right? Embrace it. Get used to it. So this is the fact of material existence. So because things are so old, we can't even believe it. Actually, there's probably going to be a day when people refuse to believe that one would ever be so naive as to hear the telephone ring and pick it up without some sort of security system to screen the call, right? Kids nowadays, they don't remember when there was a time when we used to just pick up a what we call a landline nowadays and simply answer the phone with no idea of who's on the other side, right? This is an example of how we lose sense of context due to the passing of time and the influence of Kali. People will refuse to believe that there were actually goods manufactured, say, before 50 years ago, that were not deliberately designed to fail within 2 or 3 years. Now, if you want to buy a computer, it's understood. It's explicitly described that your computer will not last more than a couple of years. You have to go back and buy another one. It used to be that people had enough virtue that they would try to build something, that people would take pride in their work, and they would try to build something that would last a lifetime. That's why we like German cars, isn't it? Everybody knows the Germans are very good at doing things like this, technologically advanced. So The Puranas are dealing with very, very old histories, and because the social context of, in those days is so different than it is now, we have trouble believing it, and we call it mythology. Mm-hmm. So not only are they dealing with very old histories, but they're not necessarily limited to this world, the world that we understand it. Because there are many worlds. That's another thing we assume is mythology, because we've lost perception to that degree. Cannot believe it. Seems far-fetched mythology. So they're dealing, and they're also, finally, they're not dealing with things in a chronological matter. This is a characteristic of the hyper-empirical mindset that is dominating the academic world, the scientific world nowadays. People like to go through things in a linear, logical, chronological fashion. And unless it's presented to them on a silver platter in that way, they have trouble putting their faith in it. See? But the Vedas are not chronological. They jump around. They don't deal with one thing after another thing after another. Because it's a whole different point. There's a whole different purpose. And that's what Srila Prabhupada mentions next. He says... it's not here, actually. It's elsewhere when he's speaking with reference to the Itihasas in particular. He says, only the chief incidents are being mentioned, just like Mahabharata. What does Mahabharata mean? This is one of those epics. It's one of those Shruti Smriti Puranadi, the epics. There are two epics, Ramayana and Mahabharata, huge books, compendium of social practice, circa about 5,000 years ago. Very, very valuable source of information. What does Srila Prabhupada say Mahabharata means? Yeah, just like we say Great Britain, or we say Greater Los Angeles Metropolitan Area. So similarly, Greater India. This is the idea. But great also means Charita Amrita. We have Chaitanya Charita Amrita, for example. It's not, strictly speaking, it's not academic history, but we're concerned with the Amrita Charita, the deathless activities, or the activities that will give us light in how to become deathless. That's called Charitamrita. Amrita, not dead. Charita means activities. So these are the important things. This is what the Maha in Mahabharata means. Right? Just like Kurukshetra, Srila Prabhupada often says, we're not concerned with any battlefield. Just a little way south on the railway from Kurukshetra, you get two other famous battlefields, Sonipat and Panipat, right? Akbar fought there, Mughals in the 16th century. Very famous battles were fought there. Nobody cares about them because they're not Charitamrita. They're not deathless history. They're not so important. Who wants to take stock of how many chapatis I ate, where I slept, what my bills were, who my friends were, and all the struggles I went through? Well, Western history, folks. But we're not interested. It's a whole different set of priorities, because there's at the adau shraddha, at the very outset, there's a particular quality of faith. In chapter 17 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna discusses the different qualities of faith. Those who have cultivated sattvic faith, they're concerned with a whole different set of priorities than those who are cultivating rajasic and tamasic faith. So the Itihasas and these Puranas, Mahabharata, etc., all these corollary Vedic literatures, Srila Prabhupada calls the Smriti, these are all concerned with things that really matter, things that impact your cultivation of deathlessness, your Krishna consciousness, your spiritual awareness in the human form of life. And we know from Hitopadesh, the humanity is not biologically defined, it's defined instead by this cultivation of spiritual awareness, and at least the principles of dharma that are unique to the human species. Therefore, all learned and realized Vedic scholars speak with references to the incidents in the Puranas. And Rupa Goswami accepts the Puranas to be as important as the Vedas themselves. I've already mentioned Srimad Bhagavatam does so as well. Now, elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada points out that Srila Jiva Goswami has argued extensively in his Tattva Sandarbha on why these Puranas are as authoritative as the Vedas. There, for those of us who are critical and analytical, he's actually spelled everything out very explicitly and in great detail. We can study that. Tattva Sandarbha should be coming out from Bhaktivedanta Book Trust by the mercy of His Grace Sriman Gopi Paranadhana Prabhu. That the work is already done, commentary is done, it's just being edited and ready for publication now. So this is the idea. Devotional service has to explicitly refer to these Vedic literatures, and Srila Prabhupada sets that example himself. Throughout his books, for example, he quotes the same old verses that some of us know. For example, Dehino Sminyatha Deheko Maram Yovanam Jara. This is a very basic point, but you find it from the beginning of the first canto all the way until the end of the tenth canto. Why? Because it's important. This is the austerity of the tongue. It purifies us to vibrate these divine vibrations. And it sets the example for those who are learning. Otherwise, we have no sense. This is a very, very important point, so please take note of this. If it were not for the fact that Srila Prabhupada would emphasize certain points and quote certain verses throughout his purports, we would never get a sense of this Siddhanta, Bhaktivedanta Siddhanta. We would never have that sense. Any devotee, serious devotee in ISKCON, who has been practicing Krishna consciousness for some time, he has a fairly clear idea of what the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is, and it is only because Srila Prabhupada took the pain and the time and trouble to spell everything out for us again and again and again and again, repeating as necessary. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, repetition of a good thing is desired so that one may understand the subject matter. So, one should not foolishly consider the Puranas to be mythological. If they were mythological, Shukdev Goswami would not have taken the trouble to recite the old historical incidents concerning the life of Ajamil. That goes without saying. It is, who's speaking this verse? Anybody keeping track? At what point in the conversation are we? This is Shukdev Goswami himself speaking this verse. So he saw fit. Now, different Vaishnava acharyas have added their comments on this verse. Our Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas have not said very much, but I think it's Vijayadwaj Tirtha in the Madhva line. He points out that this whole incident, which takes up another few chapters here in the sixth canto, the whole itihasa, the whole story, is actually described just to underscore the points that have been made in the verses 1 through 19 of this chapter. Some very, very important verses that we've already heard about. For example, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dhunvanti karsyena niharam eva bhaskara. It's a very, very well-known and oft-quoted. This is one of those verses that Srila Prabhupada quotes very often throughout his purports. And because he does this, therefore we know that this is a very important philosophical point that we should take note of. What does it mean? Anybody remember? Yeah. One cannot uproot the deep-seated tendency for sinful activity or sense gratification in general, even if it's pious. One cannot uproot these things by any means other than bhakti yoga. A very, very important point. And if one even has the dawning of the holy name of Krishna, according to the Sri Vaishnava acharyas and the Madhva Dvaita Vadi acharyas, the holy name of Krishna is also, the glory of the holy name of Krishna is being emphasized here to make the point that even if we're chanting immaturely, if we're chanting with bhakti, that is enough to dispel sinful activities and also to elevate us. So nothing else but bhakti can do this. In the beginning, I think it's one of the Pushtimargya commentators, he writes, why does Shukdev Goswami mention this itihasa? Because someone might have the doubt, because in the beginning, to answer Maharaj Pariksit's question about how to become freed from the threat of hell, what did he say? What did Shukdev Goswami answer? He gave two possible alternatives to bhakti. Anybody remember? First, he said, atonement. That's karmakanda activity. And then when Maharaj Pariksit said, no, I don't think this is going to work. This is just like an elephant taking a bath, because I know that we all have the tendency to do the same stupid thing again and again. Even if we go and just like the Christians, they say their confession and then they go out and sin again. So that's not going to work. And then he says, yes, you're right. Actually, until one develops knowledge, one cannot uproot these tendencies either. And this is, even Krishna acknowledges this in Bhagavad Gita in the earlier chapters. He's also extolling knowledge in this way in Bhagavad Gita. What does he say? Anybody know? Even if you're the most papakritama, even if you're the most sinful of all sinners, if you're situated on the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can overcome reactions. You will dissolve them. So he says that as well. But then finally he says, he comes to this point of kechit kevalya bhaktya. Only really devotional sirs can do it, because knowledge cannot keep you on this spiritual platform. It can elevate you for some time, but knowledge is by its very nature. Knowledge is hypothetical instead of practical. We need something practical to do. That's bhakti, you see. Therefore, the Acharya's comment here that the reason he goes into this whole narrative is just to emphasize this point, lest one think, well, maybe these karma and this gyan will actually work. Just to drive away those points that... So why does Shukadeva Goswami say these things? We've already read it, but just to see who is attentive. He was testing. So sometimes our gurus will test us. And many times throughout the Vedas we find a guru will test a disciple just to see whether he's really looking for the real thing or whether he's just like in the, Kathopanishad. Shvetaketu, I think it was? I forget what is the little boy's name. He was sent to the abode of Yamaraj, and he had a question for Yamaraj. He wanted to know, what happens to the self after death? Where is there a purusha who remains even after death? And Yamaraj said, you know, I can give you anything that you want, anything, but don't ask me about this. And he was testing him. He even offered him, here's some gold, you can have women, you can have land, you can have sovereignty, anything you want, but don't ask about this sort of thing. He was testing him. So, what else? Yeah, in the beginning we have this word cha here, and Srila Prabhupada is taking the word cha to mean also. Generally it means also, but at least one commentator says that the word cha in this verse means upi, which means even. So that kind of further emphasizes this idea that this whole history of Ajamila is actually meant to nullify the assumption that one has to elevate himself only by karma or by jnana. And that mainly Harinam and the chanted with bhakti can actually save one from all sorts of sins. So these are a few things we can talk about here. Anybody have any questions or comments? No. Shachitanai Prabhu. If you can ask your question, I'll just repeat it for the internet. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that by all the Vedas I am to be known.
And we understood that by Prabhupada and all the Vaishnavas were trained to see no difference between the combination of the Vedas and the Puranas. So my question will be, if I understood right, I want to know that what constitutes or qualifies or separates the Puranas from the Vedas. One of them appears to be historical things, but they're also narrated by sages, by holy men, which we accept. Is it because, this is what I'm thinking that might be, is it because the Vedas are more registered, documented, and well digested and studied, that are more valuable to some people than the Itihasas and Puranas?
That's what I explained. But it's relative, isn't it? I mean, if you understand that there's a oneness of purpose here and that there's a consistency that is found throughout the Vedas and either the Shrutis or the Smritis, then that distinction does lose a lot of its meaning, doesn't it? So the Veda, the Shruti mantra again is the Vedas and the Upanishads mainly, and then you have the Smriti as all the other literature that corroborates those. Mainly, even in fact, Srimad Bhagavatam is a Smriti literature, technically speaking. Well, the Srimad Bhagavatam itself says, and Srila Prabhupada also explains, that the Itihasas, the Puranas, the epics, etc., these literatures, the Smritis in general, these literatures are more accessible to the unintelligent people. It says, Stri Shudra Dujabantunam. That's basically us. The women, children, Shudras, fallen people, that's basically describing everybody in this age, so it doesn't really... We don't need to make that distinction. For most of us, what is not so clear in the Upanishads or in the Vedas is explicated by the Smritis, and that's why the Smritis are so important. But the important thing, the point that I'm making is that we should not become so threatened or overwhelmed or awestruck by the fact that certain respected schools of Vedic interpretation do not accept the Smritis, because this and certainly the academic idea of trying to assign more relative or recent or older dates to these various Vedic literatures, it is completely full of holes, and even within the academy itself, it's totally inconsistent. Is that clear? Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.